This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thank you, Pete, and good morning, everybody. We're Grant and Danny. We are in our DC studios, which wasn't always a certainty this morning when the show was going to start. But we made it, and you're listening to 106.7 The Fan.
Shout out to the guy that sees sky moisture, and he puts his emergency blinkers on and comes to a complete stop at the first sign of discomfort with the steering wheel. Thank God for that guy or gal. I got to tell you, the two things that suck the most about the snow coming down, thing one is the panic person who ruins it for everybody else. I'm not doing a tough guy thing. I know how to drive in the snow. I know how to do it. Here's the thing. You just have to make the mental calculation where you figure out where you're going to have to stop. And I know it's uncomfortable for a second if you're skidding, but if you come to a complete stop, especially on a hill, you're boned. You're screwed. You're it. That's it. You ruin it for yourself and everybody else. You're going to be skidding like a champion. That person sucks, and they ruin everything when it snows. And it caused you a 30-minute backup, caused me to barely get out of my neighborhood. People are U-turning, K-turning. It's a miserable thing. That's number one. Number two is the guy from somewhere in the Northeast where it snows all the time. It tells you how great he is and how everyone is great where they're from driving in the snow. Okay, Marty from Maine, go back there. You're more than welcome to go experience that all the time where you're from in Vermont. Cute, adorable. Pipe down, you condescending jerk. So those two things are what make the snow awful. Back to you.
Yeah, I'm just happy to be here. Wasn't sure I would be. Wasn't sure that I would get to do my job today.
That one got me.
Luckily enough, I am here and I get to do my job. So I'm going to choose happiness and joy.
My guy.
At 10:06, you and I are conversing and sitting by myself.
Yeah.
At a 90-degree angle in my car on some road in the surrounding area to this radio station. Lot to get to today. 11 a.m. Will Brinson. That's in 55 minutes. One of our favorite NFL guests. We will set up week 11 in the National Football League. Joe Thomas is going to be a Hall of Famer. He was one of the great Cleveland Browns. There are only a few of them over the last decade or so.
That dude was good.
He's become a pretty quality broadcaster already. He's with us at 11:30. And Caps fans Devontae Smith-Pelly is on the show today at 1:30. We'll discuss, you know, how much energy and how much of a difference has been provided by and they've gotten from Tom Wilson to this point through two games. So we'll have that for you at 1:30. Should be fun. Tonight, Thursday night football, we got a good game this evening. I got to tell you, Danny, I'm looking at the standings in the NFC, and if you look at the conference marks right now, you got the Rams and the Saints getting byes, a combined 17-2.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Of the division leaders, the 6-3 Chicago Bears host a playoff game, as do the 6-3 Washington Redskins. And then the wild card teams right now are the Carolina Panthers and the Minnesota Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have the Vikings at the Bears and the Panthers at the Redskins for a rematch of a Washington win earlier in the season, narrowly, but a win nonetheless, in the playoffs. Not pictured are the two teams playing tonight that are mainstays in the NFC postseason.
Fighting for their lives, yeah.
Green Bay 4-4-1, the first team out, and Seattle 4-5 after a loss this past weekend to the Rams. Now third of the three of the, I would say maybe five contenders on the outside looking in. You throw the Cowboys and the Eagles into the mix.
Atlanta too, yeah.
I think this is an elimination game, to be honest with you, tonight.
Yeah, the math won't work in anyone's favor if you drop it, unless you do something crazy and rip off five straight wins to end the season, and even still it may not work, right?
Yeah, if you're Seattle and you lose and you fall to 4-6, a win by either Dallas or Philadelphia means you probably have four teams ahead of you that are still not playoff teams in the NFC standings.
Yep.
Too many lily pads to leapfrog at that point. The Packers are in slightly better position because of their weird tie at the beginning of the year.
Yep.
But even still, at 4-5-1, that team's not headed to the postseason. So your winner tonight's got a shot, your loser doesn't. And to me, that makes this a really quality Thursday night football matchup.
Yeah, it's compelling. For again, you've got Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, no problem there. That's exciting. Different styles, but both incredibly effective. You've got Green Bay against a Seattle team that's not this. It's not the same group. This is now whatever it is, 3.0 for Pete Carroll. You know what I mean? Where they got the initial rise, where they were 9-7, 10-6. Then they turned into the juggernaut. Now that old guard is gone. All the Richard Shermans of the world, Legion of Boom is no more. No more Michael Bennett. No more of these guys that put them on the map, right? Marshawn Lynch, et cetera. It's now kind of the new class, the new younger wave. They're going to be, in my mind, this is going to sound weird, a really good quality 7-9 team. You know what I mean? Like, they've lost a couple games to the Rams, who are a juggernaut. They're playing better as the season goes, but they don't have the wins to show for it. This is a nice building block Seattle team.
So it was Bill Parcells who used to say, you are your record, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Redskins at 6-3, people will knock and say, oh, they're 6-3, but they're not as good as their record. The Seahawks, to me, are the opposite of that. I'm with you. They are the best 4-5 team in football. I think head-to-head, neutral site, they beat Dallas. They beat Philadelphia. They beat Atlanta right now. They're 2.5-point favorites over the Packers tonight, and I think they probably cover that at home. They get 3.5 for being at home. Most teams get 3
mm-hmm.
because of how hard it is to play there, the advantage, the noise.
Environment.
But if you look at just some of the metrics, they're 12th in points per drive in offensive rank. They're 12th in points per drive in defensive rank. They don't really have major flaws. They just don't have anything that they hang their hat on that's exceptional. But Mike McCarthy, in talking about Seattle, gave them a lot of credit because his point is this is still not a place where you want to play.
I think it's a difficult place to play for everybody. It's, you know, they have a home field advantage. You know, their stereo system is the best in the league. I mean, you can see that in pregame. I mean, it's very clear. But no, it's they got great fans, and the noise, and definitely fits their style of play too. I mean, they're an athletic defense, and you know that's definitely a challenge. And you know, it's a good atmosphere, you know, for the home team.
Nice typewriter. A lot more to come on that matchup and on Week 11 as mm-hmm. we break down some football today on this Thursday on G&D. Unfortunately, a run has ended, Danny. A reign is over. Back-to-back years, Max Scherzer won the Cy Young Award in the National League. And correctly last night, unfortunately, Jacob deGrom was named the Cy Young Award winner for the New York Mets. I had Scherzer as my Cy Young until really the end of August into September, and deGrom just kept hanging 7 innings of 1-2-run ball at a time or less. And people didn't want to give him the Cy Young because of his win total, which is an outrage and is utterly ridiculous. But luckily, only one voter didn't give him their first place vote,
mm-hmm.
which means there's only one stupid person that needs their vote taken away from them at this point, which is exciting because it used to be that 23 people wouldn't have given him their vote.
Right.
So writers are learning, the media is learning that pitcher wins and losses do not matter nearly as much as the things they actually control. And one day we'll get there with quarterbacks as well. We haven't quite done that yet, but this was last evening as they made the announcement for the National League Cy Young.
Receiving more support from the writers than his teammates, Jacob deGrom was a runaway winner of the National League Cy Young Award. The Mets right-hander, whose dazzling statistics made up for lack of victories, was named first on 29 ballots and second on 1. Runner-up Max Scherzer of the Nationals received the other first-place vote.
And I appreciate that Max Scherzer did get that first-place vote, even though it was, again, an incorrect first-place vote. But Scherzer, we love you. You finished top 5 in Cy balloting, I believe now six years in a row.
Straight years.
First ballot Hall of Famer. You've surpassed Clayton Kershaw as the best pitcher in the game. Well done, sir. And if you're keeping score at home, Scherzer's been a National for 4 years. In 2015, he was not on our show every week. He did not win the Cy Young. In 2016, he was on our show every week. He did win the Cy Young.
Mm-hmm.
In 2017, mm-hmm. he was on our show every week. He did win the Cy Young. And in 2018, again, not on our show every week, and he did not win the Cy Young. I'm just saying, please, someone strike a deal immediately with Max Scherzer and get him back on our show, and thank you.
There is a correlation at minimum that we can certainly say. To DeGrom, a couple things. Team record in games that Jacob DeGrom started, 14-18. Team record in games that Lucas Giolito, statistically the worst pitcher in Major League Baseball, started, 14-18. People that think pitcher wins dictate something, please update your file. I love Earl Forsey. I heard him going in on this with Chris Russell the other night. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Pitcher wins are for dinosaurs. It's in the Mesozoic era. We have come too far.
My guy Earl
we know
was
too
doing
much.
That thing?
Yes.
Oh, my
I had the outrage. I couldn't believe it. I'm shaking my fist at the car. Jacob deGrom, a couple quick notes about him. number one, had one start in each of these categories where he gave up four earned runs and one start where he walked four people.
Do me a favor.
Those are his low. Those are the worst things he did all season long. Everything else, less than three runs. Everything else, less than three bases on balls.
It is the wintertime after all, Danny. The weather is cold. It's actually snowing. I'm looking right out the window right now.
Oh, it is.
Snowing.
I see it, yeah.
There's snow on the ground. What we need to do together is we all need to collect every story written online today about a pitcher win mattering and Jacob DeGrom not deserving the Cy Young Award. We need to collect all those stories and print them out. And then we need to get every story written, including by my guy that I love so much, a regular on the show, Michael Phillips, this week, who wrote one of the most insane stories I've ever seen in my life in the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Couldn't believe it. Anything about quarterback wins and losses, anything where they say he just wins.
He's a winner.
He has his team at 6-3, even though they're winning in spite of him. And we need to print all that out. And then as you need to over the course of the winter, you just burn it in your fireplace. Because it's going to keep you warm. Those flames will keep you warm.
A little bonfire.
And that's what all of that paper that those things are written on is deserving.
It can be the old ways dying. We can figure it out. We know more now, don't we?
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Tressway was named the special teams player of the week. He has been marvelous for Washington. Who else has been an unsung hero for the Redskins? We'll talk about players on the team not getting their just due next on Grant and Danny.
Guys, it is raining outside. Nay, it is snowing outside. I'm looking at it. That's ridiculous. It means it's a great time to go and get some great deals on cars. You guys know that, right? End of the year, the 2018s, they got to go. You get some awesome deals. That's going on at Tedbert Ford. It's a no-down November at Tedbert Ford. That's zero down on every new Tedbert Ford during the Black Friday sale. Here's the thing. You don't have to wait for next Friday. There's no door busters. None of that nonsense here. You don't have to wait in line for the new Madden at midnight the night before. None of that stuff. It's happening right now, all month long. What does it mean? No gimmicks, no games, no hidden fees, no kidding. Zero down. I'm going to stress that to you. Zero down. So the price is the price. None of that plus, plus, plus. None of that extra math. None of that fuzzy math type stuff some of the other dealerships do. This is the price. Escape, $239 a month for at least 36 months. Echo Sport, $229 a month. $299 a month for a Mustang. $379 a month for an Explorer. $399 a month for an F-150. Yeah, the F-150. All with zero down. These payments are the real deal. None of the other stuff. None of the bait and switch like the other guys do. And when you buy from Tedbert Ford, you get Tedbert for life. That's lifetime vehicle coverage. Comes standard with your new vehicle. Includes powertrain, service loaners, battery replacement, windshield repair, the whole nine yards. You got to go see my guys at Tedbert Ford. And when you do, tell them Danny sent you.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan at 11, Will Brinson on the Week 11 matchups most worthy of your time. Yesterday, Tress Way was named the Special Teams Player of the Week.
My man, Tress.
In the NFC.
Boomer.
He is having just a phenomenal season. And I'm happy for him that he's getting credit for it because a lot of times punting exploits go unnoticed, but punters are people too. 42 punts on the year. 25 of them have been dropped inside the 20, pinning opponents into what is considered terrible field position.
Like using a 9-9 on the Masters green, man.
60% of his punts, think about that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Have resulted in starting field position
ridiculous.
For the opponent inside their own 20. Now, I reference this ratio a lot because it's staggering for Tress Way. Tress Way does not have a touchback yet. So in the same way that after a game you want to look at John Wall's assist-to-turnover ratio to see how involved his teammates were and how much he was passing the ball and creating offense without turning the ball over, the ratio of pinning teams inside the 20 to touchbacks is always huge. So at times in Tressway's career, it's been 21 inside the 20 and 7 touchbacks, 15-4, 33-6 last year was really good. Right now it's 25-0. It's hard to do.
It's unbelievable.
If you want to talk about why the Redskins are 6-3, you start with their defense.
Yeah, they start with their plus 11 in turnover margin.
I would start with their defense first, honestly, and I would go to the turnover margin second because their defense has just stolen them games even when they weren't generating takeaways. They averaged less than 2 per week before this past week, as an example, and then they went and got 4. And there have been games like that Dallas game or what have you where just the offense couldn't do anything, but somehow they won the football game. But, yeah, you've got defense, you've got turnover margin, you've got, I would say, not turning the ball over. That's Alex Smith, that's Adrian Peterson, that's the people touching the football. But somewhere high on that list, Danny,
it's not too far down the list,
is field position and special teams. And Tressway's face is what you use for that category.
You're right in the sense that this is not how you usually are thinking about building a football team, especially now in this era. You look at the teams that are at the top of our power rankings that have a great chance to host playoff games this year. It's, with the exception of Tampa Bay, the five best offenses in the sport. The top offenses, throwing the football. Drew Brees is on like a 21-1 touchdown to interception ratio kind of a year, right? New England looks vulnerable because Brady's been human the last 3 weeks without Rob Gronkowski and whatever. But this is the, if you can't do it their way, you've got to be excellent in every other area. And that's the thing that I think a lot of Redskins fans, there's two ways to look at it. One, you compliment guys like Tressway. You compliment the special teams for not screwing you, for actually doing things that are really helping you win. But there's nothing sexy about it, if that makes any sense, right? The Redskins have to be perfect in everything because they don't have the kind of offense that's just going to go out and ring the bell for 35 points if the action calls for it. If it becomes that kind of game, they can just sit everybody and go to the locker room and, you know, and play ping pong, much to the chagrin of Chris Russell. They've got to be excellent in every other area. There's less room for error, less room for margin. And I think the fact that this is happening this way, Dustin Hopkins has been excellent kicking the football, both in terms of touchbacks and field goals. And Tressway has been incredible, and punt coverage has been incredible. They've rotated different guys with injuries and the like. They've been really, really good. If you give up a back-breaking return, it undoes all the great work that the defense is doing. It's been instrumental.
Tressway has been good enough that he's the reason that we're going to have the conversation we are right now. So don't make him the answer to the question. In other words, this is the Tressway discussion. But in honor of that, and in honor of him, who else has been an unsung hero for the Redskins this season? Who else that is not getting any credit for really being important to this football team, would you say, you know what, people aren't talking enough about this guy because without him, they're not 6-3. 800-636-1067 is the number. That's 800-636-1067. You mentioned Dustin Hopkins. Hopkins, who's banged up right now, they were working out Blair Walsh and Kai Forbath and a bunch of available kickers this week, has hit all five of his kicks between 20 and 29 yards. All four of his kicks between 30 and 39. He's missed two kicks between 40 and 49, his only two misses of the year. He's 3 for 350+. And on the season, he is 17 for 19 on field goal attempts, and he's made all 17 of his extra points. He's also been really good on kickoffs. You can't have a better nine-game start to your season, really, than Dustin Hopkins has.
And now he's banged up, so we'll see what happens this weekend. They tried out some kickers this week, including old buddy Kai Forbath, who they couldn't wait to get rid of him. I got a guy here, Jeeps. This is truly in the unsung category. He plays about half the snaps on defense. He doesn't have a lot of huge numbers because a lot of what he does is to just take away the option. Think about how many running backs over the years have killed the Redskins in the pass game. Think about the scat backs that have ruined Christmas and all the holidays and made it awkward at dinner by bringing up some political issue. Josh Harvey Clemens has been instrumental for this team. They're in their nickel package all the time. He's who Sua Cravens was supposed to be. And, yeah, there may not be the playmaking gene that Cravens had. Think of that interception against Eli Manning and the Giants. But Harvey Clemens has a sack. He's been in the backfield. He's blitzed a couple times, knocked down a couple passes, has made some tackles, has a couple quarterback hits, kind of a Swiss Army knife in that nickel package. He plays a ton, especially in this division, where you see a lot of three-receiver sets. He is in the game a lot. He comes in for Zach Brown an awful lot. Sometimes they're on the field together. Harvey Clemens has been one of those guys, those role players that nobody talks about, who has stepped in admirably, I would say. Went from, you know, back end of the roster guy to instrumental on a defense that's been pretty good.
800-636-1067. I love that one. I've got two guys here that I'm going to name next, and we want your calls. Let us know who you think is not getting enough credit for the Redskins 6-3 mark. This is called the Tressway phone call.
The Tressway Award.
800-636-1067. Brinson at 11. Joe Thomas at 11:30. DSP today. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan. Skins aren't 6-3. field position has been paramount. And week in and week out, he has forced opponents to start drives at the 4, the 6, the 7, the 11. And against this defense, you've got to go 85, 90 yards, 95 yards, make 12, 13 plays. It's real tough. So next thing you know, you're committing a penalty. I mean, we know this from watching the Redskins offense.
Yeah.
When you can't get anything easy, when there is no big play down the field, when there's no chunk yardage.
It's got to be perfect.
I got to go 13, 14 plays. Everyone goes, well, you know, they commit this penalty. And I heard this yesterday. Our buddy Craig Hoffman's a Redskins beat reporter, does a great job for us. And he sends us these emails based on the reporting he does and kind of the interviews he does during the day. And he said, I talked to a few guys about the offensive execution, and you know, the thought was they're getting really close, but they're committing one penalty here or there. They're going to keep committing one penalty here or there.
Because when
you go on 12 and 13 play drives, when that's what's necessary, you commit a penalty. The more plays you run, the longer you're on the field, the longer your drives are, the more tired you are, the more fatigued and run down you are. That means mentally you're going to have lapses. That means physically you're going to have lapses. Teams that commit penalties have to work harder for points than other teams, and it's a chicken or the egg thing. But I guess my point is, defensively, the Redskins benefit from the exact same thing because of the field position, and give Alex Smith credit. Give the Redskins offense credit. Generally, even though they're not necessarily scoring points, they are able to protect the football, and oftentimes when they stall, it's around midfield or 45-yard line, and Tressway can drop a golf shot in there that spins back toward the green.
Can I just take a brief moment to say thank you for addressing that penalty thing? This drives me insane. As this is some sort of explanation. You know who has more penalties than the Redskins? The Rams. You know who has more penalties than the Redskins? The Vikings, the Patriots, New Orleans, etc., etc., etc. Somehow, those teams still provide offense and points. The idea that a penalty is enough to disrupt. No. It disrupts you because your offense isn't any good. That's the explanation. That's the end-all, be-all. In addition to our offense not being good, we can't overcome penalties. You say that, you get your pal Fannie Mouye in on the argument. If it goes, well, we're close to executing really well, but the penalties have killed us. Penalties don't kill good offenses. Penalties disrupt good offenses slightly. It's not easy to get first and 20. Somehow these great offenses are able to do it all the time. The league allows for it. So much lovely passing. Passing is so delightful. It's so ubiquitous, except here. Don't ever, 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 ever tell me that it's the offense because of the penalties. No. If your offense sucks, then penalties kill you. Defensively, yeah. You can commit a holding penalty, give some first downs. Those penalties can kill you. A good defense can disrupt you. Certain weeks back in the day, Seattle would have a weird defensive output because people were calling their press coverage tight. They jam a receiver past 5 yards, whatever. They keep doing it, and it keeps getting called. So they have weird defensive numbers. That can disrupt you. That's fine. When your offense is inept, terrible, incapable, nothing comes easy, and you have to have perfect execution just to get yourself a couple first downs because every yard is schemed up for, don't ever tell me it's because of the penalty.
Well, I think every offense is worse off when you commit a penalty.
Of course it is. Of course it's harder.
But it shouldn't be a death sentence when you get a 5-yard false start, and now it's second and 15.
Oh,
which for this offense it is.
Crazy.
Because you can't. Well, you're not moving the ball enough to overcome it. 800-636-1067. Let's get to the phones. My guy, by the way, I'll give you my first.
I'll give you another guy later. Sorry. I had to rant.
My underrated Redskin who isn't getting enough credit. I think Chase Roullier has been really good.
Cousin Chase.
And it's not just that he's been outstanding as a center and he's pushing people around and he's been good in the running game. With everything going on around him, his job is as a second-year kid who's still a neophyte largely and learning things every single week. His job, Danny, is to get on the same page all week long with used to be Trent Williams, now it's Ty Insecki. Used to be Sean Laval, now it's Jonathan Cooper. Used to be Brandon Scherff. Now it's Bergstrom, who's played multiple positions. By the way, Ruyo's had to play guard as well. The fact that the offensive line has not missed that much of a beat with all these injuries, it's a huge credit to Bill Callahan, who's my other guy, by the way, who deserves more credit in this organization.
You. Good one.
But Ruyo on the field as the barker of signals, as the guy getting everyone on the same page.
Oh, sure.
I think he's done a masterful job. Kenny's in Richmond. How are you, Kenny?
Doing just fine. How are you?
Good, buddy.
I'd like to say Mason Foster. He's been one of the best free agent pickups we've had in recent years. And without him, our defense isn't what it is. He's in almost every run tackle. He's all over the field. He's sideline to sideline. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves.
I think he's been terrific throughout this year. Now, doesn't have the, you know, the whatever you want to call it, that Patrick Willis or Luke Kuechly kind of middle linebacker playmaking gene where he's going to pick off three passes and force six fumbles and have five or six sacks. All he does is chases people down, covers pretty well, and tackles. Tight ends used to murder the Redskins, ruin everything. Combination of DJ Swearinger's play and I think Mason Foster's play have changed that. That narrative isn't true anymore. Now, when Zach Ertz comes to town, he'll still get 15 catches.
Well, you mentioned Josh Harvey Clemens. I think he's probably the biggest reason
he's helped
they've
a lot
done
too.
A great job against tight ends.
I feel
ends.
Like he does a lot on the running backs, but he's got some tight end assignment as well. The point is, it's all working on a string. And Mason Foster's your signal caller back there. I think he's been really, really good.
What about on offense? Is there anyone on offense you'd say unsung hero? The guy I came up with was Maurice Harris. Maurice Harris is got a little Ryan Grant in him. He's not going to do anything after the catch. He's kind of going to get to the ground or go down on first contact.
Yeah.
But he catches everything. No one gets open like he gets open. Now, maybe that's partially the offense. Jamison Crowder used to do that in a slot where there's just running room to be had. But for an offense with zero separation.
None.
And you can't knock Alex Smith for this. These receivers are devoid of the ability to run behind people. Josh Doctson's next wide open catch is going to be his first without someone draped all over him like a blanket. Maurice Harris stays wide open in the middle of the field. Every time he catches the ball, there's no one within 3 yards of him. To me, that tells me he's doing something right. I think he's been undervalued.
That's his best. That's as good as I can come up with. Because I think this offense is so bad, and we've sung Adrian Peterson's praises, rightfully so, that my example, if I had to ponder it, I didn't want to give anybody any credit on the offense. It would have been Cousin Chase because of the fill-in. Maybe Ty Insecki for playing a couple different spots.
I thought about a hipster answer, and I thought about going Alex Smith because people are so down on him because he's stunk, but because the lack of turnovers is a huge reason why they're 6-3.
It's a massive reason.
So if you're saying, basically, guy's not getting enough credit for the record, you could go with Alex Smith, but we talk so much about the lack of turnovers, it's literally the only thing he's got.
Yeah.
It's like a fat, gross, mean person with terrible breath and awful haircut, and it's like, but...
Nice eyebrows.
He's a super nice guy. We over-talk about the lack of turnovers because it's all you can talk about.
Right, and here's the other thing. I wouldn't go that way. I'm not saying you're stumping for this, but I wouldn't argue that simply because of the amount of people that just say, the quarterback's record is 6-3, and then feel as if they've won some sort of conversation
argument. But in the same way we're saying that Maurice Harris has something to do with the record, that Mason Foster or Tress Way have something to do with the record, everybody contributes to the record.
Sure, but on the unsung front, the guy's getting too much credit for a team's record because quarterback record is
asinine. Oh, true. Yeah.
So that's why it would never come up to me, but I see your point.
I was watching whatever it is, NFL Countdown or one of the shows yesterday, and they were pointing out the Redskins are 6-3 and in first place, and it was Alex Smith is doing it again. He's led the Redskins to 6-3. Someone who has not watched this team this year. You know what I mean? If you say Alex Smith has the Redskins at 6-3, or that basically they're 6-3 because he's their quarterback, you just haven't watched them.
Here's my view on this. And this, by the way, is a bigger picture. Maybe not existential is not the right word, but the bigger picture thing. If you cite quarterback record, then there's no point to this industry. There's no point to having conversations. There's no point to having television people talk about anything. There's no point to print. There's no point to radio. There's no point to any of it. If you believe quarterback record is the end-all, be-all, simply Google quarterback record, and that'll tell you who the best person is. That'll just tell you. You'll learn that Alex Smith, a higher career winning percentage than several Hall of Fame quarterbacks. So there you go. That's your answer. If you're ready to have conversations where there's wonderful debate and nuance and what do you value more, but touchdown passes or turnovers or yards per attempt or scramble percentage or how is he against the blitz, if you want to have those conversations, read, watch TV, listen to the radio. But I can't believe still the number of talking heads that go, what's the bottom line? He wins games. There you go. As if there's no other. What do they need you for then? They just need Google.
I'm out on Pro Football Focus grades. People think I'm out on the website. I love the website. I'm on the website every day. I just don't like their grades at certain positions, including quarterback. But Sam Monson wrote a story for the Washington Post where he listed a bunch of their grades on the quarterbacks. And he had Alex Smith's time in Kansas City, he graded out as a 79.6, this year a 68.8, 24th among quarterbacks. He ranks behind Blake Bortles in the PFF grading system right now. Of the possible playoff opponents that the Redskins could get, the list includes guys like Breeze, Goff, Cousins, Rodgers, Wentz, all obviously considerably higher, top 10 in grades for them. Only Mitchell Trubisky of the Bears, who ranks 30th, is a quarterback of a team that is right now playoff bound that rates lower. But the analytics that I actually like are things, you know, numbers that are devised and crunched to dictate effectiveness. So if you look at, like, some of the numbers, how often he's willing to be aggressive and those types of things. He throws the deep ball on 10.6% of his passes this year. His passer rating on those throws has plummeted to 77.7. He's completed 10 of 32 deep attempts for 2 touchdowns. He's the 4th worst deep ball thrower in the league right now. We were told this offseason, because he was the best last year at it when he had Travis Kelce and Kareem Hunt and
Tyreek Hill,
that, you know, this is something he can do now. Well, only 3 quarterbacks qualifying right now have lower passer ratings on deep throws than Alex Smith: Case Keenum, Joe Flacco, and a rookie, Sam Darnold, who throws a pick every time he drops back. That is not to say he's terrible. If people hear that and they're like, you hate Alex Smith. No, it's just information that you should take and file away.
And here's
he also
how I process
doesn't
that.
Turn the ball over ever. That helps.
Yeah, here's how I process that. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and Kareem Hunt are not here. He has worse weapons around him, so a facet of his game is worse. There's no miracle here. You take if Ben Roethlisberger had to play this weekend without Antonio Brown, without Juju Smith-Schuster, and without James Conner, you think he might have worse numbers?
And by the way,
is it possible?
In fairness to Alex Smith, this has to be said. He has very little help right now in the passing game. It's exactly what you're saying.
And this is my point. And even if he did, it still wouldn't be, you know, I don't know, Drew Brees at this point. But there's a happy medium there. If he's got nice things around him, nice things happen. If he doesn't, lo and behold, he's just not going to turn it over, and you got to punt a bunch. There's nothing revolutionary here.
You want some good news for the Skins? Good
Give
news
it to
for
me.
Smith?
Give it to me.
The Texans are dealing with some pretty important injuries as well. Got a little update on the Texans injury report as they get ready to come to Washington. Next on Grant and Danny, the good guys are 6-3 and in first place. Grant and Danny, 106-7, the fan. The Texans have won 6 straight. It's funny, they are, in a lot of ways, the Redskins of the AFC right now.
Yeah.
They're hotter. They're the hottest team in football, because they haven't lost in a month and a half. But what I mean by that is they're not getting enough credit for the fact that they just keep winning football games. Just like Washington, people are dismissing. And I understand why. You and I have been guilty of it different at times, and I think you're actually right to look at how teams win, who they beat, how we got here. Context does matter. But it doesn't mean that if you're the Texans, you can't kind of stick your chest out and say, hey, listen up, people not playing. We're winning. We are figuring it out. And the Redskins can say the exact same thing. So the Texans' 6 straight wins. This streak began after a loss to, believe it or not, the Giants. They were 0-3.
Watson just wasn't himself yet for the first couple weeks of the season. First few weeks, really.
Patriots beat the Texans 27-0. Then the Titans handled them by a field goal, and that was before Tennessee kind of got right over the last couple of weeks, way back in week 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then they lost to the Giants by 5 points. And you're right. Watson looked like he was a long ways from being himself. We were talking about Bill O'Brien potentially getting fired. Remember that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
They're 0-3, and he was on the hot seat.
That Giants loss at home just was bad then. It looks worse now. Just gross.
In fact, I forgot about this. The first game of their winning streak was that disaster of a loss by the Colts when Frank Reich, their first-year head coach, put the game on a platter, and I didn't hate the decision. Analytically, it was sound, but he went for a 4th down in overtime, basically saying, I'd rather lose than tie. And so in his own territory, he went for a 4th down, gave the Texans the ball back to kick a game-winning field goal. Remember
that? Even to get to the point of overtime, by the way, the Colts were driving to win the football game, and there was a horrendous fumble, I believe, by Jack Doyle in the waning moments that led Houston tie it. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
So Houston should have been 0-4. They weren't. They were 1-3. And I remember watching that game. I'd have to go back and find some of my tweets about the specifics. But I remember O'Brien took some of the worst timeout selections and usages at the end of that game that I've ever seen. And I thought, okay, this guy is not going to have a job by the time the Redskins play. They're going to be 0-4. Well, they were 1-3. But from that point forward, all they had to do, I guess, was just figure out a way to get one. They started feeling themselves. The next game, they won in overtime for the second time in a row. So instead of being 0-5, they were 2-3. They beat the Cowboys 19-16. And if you remember, Jason Garrett also gifted them just a ridiculously weird decision where the Cowboys decided to throttle it down and not continue to advance, and they settled for a really long field goal, just like they did, by the way, against the Redskins a few weeks later. So they were 2-3 then. Then they played the Bills. Buffalo is not as good as Houston. You should win that game. They won a one-possession close game in October. At that point, they were 500. They had yet to really play a strong game. They were 3-3. And to me, that's when something clicked. Because since they've been a different team, they pounded the Jaguars on the road in Jacksonville. They crushed the Dolphins. That was a nationally televised, I want to say it was a Thursday night game. I remember watching it, and they hung 42 on Miami in a 20-point win. Most recently, they beat Denver by 2 points. This was before their bye week back in early November, because they were idle this past week. But really, they've had two signature victories at Jacksonville, home against the Dolphins. They squeaked out a win against Denver. They won two overtime games. But if you're of the belief that don't tell me how you got the car here, just park it.
Just park it.
And you don't worry about anything else. Six straight wins. Everything's kind of come up Houston over the last month plus.
You just went through that, and look at how they eked out these wins, and look at that. They're a plus 32 on the season. The Redskins are plus one after a 13-point victory this past weekend.
Yep.
They've scored 40 more points than the Redskins, a.k.a. just less than a touchdown per game.
They've got offense.
Yeah, and they've only given up 9 more points, meaning 1 point per game, basically, which is a negligible difference statistically. The point is, they're eking it out at 6-3, but their eke out still looks more impressive than does the Redskins, if that makes any sense. The Texans have marquee players. The Texans have stars that teams covet. Everybody wants DeAndre Hopkins. Everybody wants J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, Whitney Mercilus. Everybody's intrigued by Deshaun Watson, etc. The Redskins have way more, I would not say way more is not the right word. Redskins have a lot of guys, hey, that guy's pretty good. They got a lot of guys. That's a solid starter. That's a really good player. Maybe insiders will tell you how great Jonathan Allen is, or Matt Ioannidis is having a great season. But there's no, nobody's on the Madden cover from Washington. You know what I mean? There's nobody that's the face of a charity like J.J. Watt that's gonna break records in a matter of moments. If that makes any sense. Houston's got more marquee than does Washington. Matchup's intriguing. To me though, the high end talent of Houston is what scares you, right? On a weekly basis, DeAndre Hopkins gets a ball. He could do something like he did in that Dallas game where he had 17 spin moves, turns a little hitch route into 30-plus yards, and then they win the football game on a field goal late because he's that good. There's nobody on the Redskins that can do that.
The injuries I referred to, two wide receivers. DeAndre Hopkins limited in practice yesterday. My guess is he'll go coming off of a bye week. And Kiki Coody, the wide receiver who basically has now become a starter and is important to them as well, also limited in practice yesterday. So while the Redskins' secondary is banged up and Quentin Dunbar is still not 100%, that is a really helpful bit of news. We'll see if either of those two guys does miss time on Sunday. Will Brinson of CBS Sports' Eye on NFL blog next. What does he make of Le'Veon Bell not returning to the Pittsburgh Steelers? He will not play this year. How about the line in Saints-Eagles? The Saints are favored by 9 now if that line keeps moving. Black Will of Lost that next, right here on the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.